Adventures in Research. A fence works two ways. You can use it to keep something out or to hold something in. This is the story of a fence around America that helped open the plains and colonize the prairies. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today, telling you a story called The Fence Around America. The 19th century was a time for moving west, a time for picking up and going along, tracing the trails across the wilderness to a new and mighty promised land. And the pioneers moved westward until there was nothing but the ocean to stop them. Neither hunger, nor fear, nor wild beasts, nor Indians halted that westward progress.
Get along there. Get moving. Come on, get.
Say there, stranger. Nice herd of cattle you got there. Where are you bound for?
Chicago.
Chicago? Don't you think it's a fur piece to drive a herd of cattle?
Oh, it sure is, but well, they say they're paying for leather out there. Come on. Get moving there. Get along.
The cattle went west along with the people. By 1865, cattlemen no longer thought of cattle for leather, but for beef. And out west, the cattle roamed by the million head. And back east, meat markets couldn't keep up with the demand. The cattle towns extended wherever the railroads ran and beyond.
Abilene, Texas? Never heard of it.
Well, maybe not, son, but you're going to. The whole consarn country will be hearing about Abilene. We're going to put her on the map as the cow town of the USA. Just a wilderness now, but in a couple of years, there'll be hotels and houses and dance halls and stores and people and cattle.
In Abilene, Texas? How come you know so much about it and talk so big?
Son, when I say Abilene is going to be the cow center of the USA, I know what I'm talking about. I just bought the town.
By 1871, 700,000 head of cattle were driven to Abilene, and the cattle kingdom spread.
Say, there's nice grazing land up north of stretch, up in the Great Plains. Cattle what's grazing up there fetch a better price.
Yes, the cattle kingdom spread. And soon the Great Plains from Canada to Mexico became the free domain of the cowboy. But meanwhile, in America, other changes were in prospect.
I tell you, when we beat those Johnny Rebs, I'm going to get me some land out west. Now, they got this here homestead law. A fella like me can get a piece of land a quarter of a mile to the side. Think of it, boys. My own homestead.
So another kind of pioneer began moving west, to build homes and till the land. On all the trails, the trains of wagons became literally endless, because the government offered a square of land in the public domain to anyone who would cultivate it. By the 1870s, the homesteaders had reached farther and farther and were then at the threshold of the cattle kingdom.
Yes, sir, Jeff. Here a man's got room to breathe. Why, as far as the eye can see, there's land. Homesteads like mine and yours. Good soil where we can get something to grow. Not like back home where there was more rocks than there was soil.
Well, where I was, we didn't have many rocks, Tom. But trees? Why, to get a patch to plant anything, you had to cut down one tree after another. Man, I built enough fences out of the trees we cut down to...
You built fences? What do you think me and Pa did with all them stones we dug up? We built enough stone fences back east to go clear around Vermont.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we ain't got no need for fences here. Everybody's friendly.
Sure. Neighbors like you and me. All of us homesteaders with our common pasture.
And our own brand on our own cows. We sure don't need no...
Wait, Jeff. Look. Oh, great land of Goshen.
What in tarnation?
Cattle again. Get out of here, you varmints.
Well, them cattlemen don't care where they let their herds get to. Come, get out of here. Hand me my shotgun, Tom.
Get out of here.
Get
off my land. Hey, you. You belong to them cows.
Maybe I do and maybe I don't. Better put down that shotgun, friend. Unless you got a craving for swapping land.
Now, look here. This is our land. You get them cattle and yourself off. Pronto.
Your land? Listen, friend. We've been using this for range before you ever got your feet wet out here.
Well, it's our land now. And you skedaddle. And take them critter with you.
And just who says it's your land?
The U.S. government says so.
Well, now, you better get saddled and get to Washington and have them blow your nose for you. And you better stay back east when you get there. Out of my way.
Blast them fellas anyhow. They think they got some sort of privilege to use the whole blame state.
How can we grow anything when they come swarming through here, trampling our crops?
I tell you, Jeff, the only thing to do is to call us a meeting of all the homesteaders and see what we can do to stop them. Because if we can't, we better pack up and head back east right now and leave all this land of ours to the cattle. And it's the duty of the cattlemen to control their cows and keep them off private lands. The U.S. government has given us land on the condition we cultivate it, right?
Right.
And how can we do that when they let their cattle romp loose and trample everything to dust?
Yeah, their cows got mixed in with my own stock and they all took off.
You see? I move we make these cattlemen fence their cows in.
While the cattleman said,
"The Great Plains are ours by right of primary occupation. We got here first, and we ain't going to be pushed around. Why, them Johnny-come-latelys, how'd they get here? By following our trails, the trails we laid out to the railheads and the grazing grounds. Now, the open range is ours by primary privilege, and if these homesteaders don't like it, let them build a fence and keep our cows out of their old land."
Yes, a fence works both ways. But should the homesteaders fence the cattle out, or the cattlemen fence them in?
Son, you better fence them cows in.
If you don't like our cattle, fence your land and keep them out.
Why, you...
I can lick you!
That was the impasse. Did the Great Plains belong to the cattlemen who got there first, or to the homesteaders who had been given the land? It was a problem that was to be solved not by fisticuffs, nor government, nor oratory. Actually, it was an argument that was solved by science, by a simple invention perfected almost simultaneously by three men from the village of DeKalb, Illinois. In the early 1870s, DeKalb, Illinois was a village amid farmland. And here were two rather prosperous farmers and a hardware dealer, all of them with a flair for mechanics. So it was only natural that all three of them, Joseph Glidden, Isaac Elwood, and Jacob Haish, would visit the county fair and be especially interested in the newest mechanical devices that were on display.
Well, now, what do you make of that, Joe?
Yeah, just a plain, ordinary fence, except for them do-funnies there. Not a bad idea at all, Jake.
Yeah, looks like some fellow has taken smooth wire and built his fence and then added these little wooden strips. Ooh, what? Boy, sharp too, Joe.
Yes, that's a right smart fence. Yeah, them sharp spikes ought to sort of disturb any cow that goes bumping into it.
Yeah, it's worth thinking about. Well, I guess we better round up the women folk and be getting round.
That was 1873, and all three men returned home from the county fair, deep in thought over the fence with the wooden sticks. Before many months had passed, all three of them had applied for patents for a special kind of wire fence. Instead of pointed sticks, this fence had knotty wire barbs. and DeKalb, Illinois was ready to put itself on the map. The three inventors kept turning out a steady supply of their barbed wire for fences, and they soon attracted the attention of the wire manufacturers themselves.
It's funny. Another order for wire from DeKalb, Illinois.
Funny? What's so funny about it? Do you find it humorous that someone orders our product when we make the finest wire in the
entire... I didn't mean funny like that. I mean, it's odd that, well, we get so many orders from DeKalb, Illinois. Sort of an odd name for a town. And you know, I went and looked it up. It's only a little place. So, I keep wondering what in tarnation they do with all the wire we sell them.
You say we have quite a few orders? Might be worth checking into. Bring me the invoices and the addresses of where all these shipments are going.
The wire makers soon found out what was being done with the wire. And by 1876, barbed wire was being made of Bessemer steel with rapid automatic machinery for twisting the wire and attaching the barbs, and for galvanizing it as well. And as to its success...
Listen, you. You better get rid of that fence or I'm going to tear it down with my bare hands. You understand me?
Listen, cowboy. This property is mine because I'm homesteading it. So you keep your spavined old critters off it. And if you know what's good for them, keep them clear of that fence.
All right, friend. I guess you asked for it. Now I'm going to rip it down. Oh, what the Sam Hill is that?
Oh. He snagged his britches on the barbed wire fence, he did. Look at him skedaddle. That'll learn him.
With inexpensive barbed wire to protect them, the homesteaders stuck it out. They reached farther and farther into the Great Plains. And even the cattlemen found it profitable to fence in their stock, for the wild herds grew tame and produced better meat. And the open range, with all its wild running stock and its outlawry, finally yielded to peaceful and productive farms and ranches. Yes, three men from DeKalb, Illinois, helped to build a fence around America that protected its very heart when they put the barb in barbed wire and set in motion an unusual adventure in research. That's today's Adventures in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to Armed Forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.